and yet a miss. "The others take it," her brother swore. The boat was almost out of range, drifting in and out among the river mists. Wordless, Edmure thrust the bow at his uncle. "Swiftly," Sir Brendan said. He knocked an arrow, held it steady for the brand, drew and released before Catelyn was quite sure that the fire had caught. But as the shot rose, she saw the flame trailing through the air, a pale yellow pennon. The boat had vanished in the mists. Falling, the flaming arrow was swallowed up as well, but only for a heartbeat. Then, sudden as hope, they saw the red bloom flower. The sails took fire, and the fog glowed pink and orange. For a moment, Catelyn saw the outline of the boat clearly, wreathed in leaping flames. "Watch for me, little cat," she could hear him whisper. Catelyn reached out blindly, groping for her brother's hand, but Edmure had moved away to stand alone on the highest point of the battlements. Her uncle Brendan took her hand instead, twining his strong fingers through hers. Together they watched the little fire grow smaller as the burning boat receded in the distance. And then it was gone, drifting downriver still, perhaps, or broken up and sinking. The weight of his armour would carry Lord Hoster down to rest in the soft mud of the riverbed in the watery halls where the Tollys held eternal court, with schools of fish their last attendance. No sooner had the burning boat vanished from their sight than Edmure walked off. Catelyn would have liked to embrace him, if only for a moment, to sit for an hour or a night or the turn of a moon to speak of the dead and mourn. Yet she knew as well as he that this was not the time. He was Lord of Riverrun now, and his knights were falling in around him, murmuring condolences and promises of fealty, walling him off from something as small as a sister's grief. Edmure listened, hearing none of the words. "It's no disgrace to miss your shot," her uncle told her quietly. "Edmure should hear that. The day my own lord father went down river, Hoster missed as well." With his first shaft, Catelyn had been too young to remember, but Lord Hoster had often told the tale. His second found the sail. She sighed. Edmure was not as strong as he seemed. Their father's death had been a mercy when it came at last, but even so her brother had taken it hard. Last night in his cups he had broken down and wept, full of regrets for things undone and words unsaid. He ought never to have ridden off to fight his battle on the fords, he told her tearfully. He should have stayed at their father's bedside. "I should have been with him, as you were," he said. "Did he speak of me at the end? Tell me true, Cat. Did he ask for me?" Lord Hoster's last word had been Tansy, but Catelyn could not bring herself to tell him that. "He whispered your name," she lied, and her brother nodded gratefully and kissed her hand. If he had not tried to drown his grief and guilt, he might have been able to bend a bow, she thought to herself, sighing. But that was something else she dared not say. The Blackfish escorted her down from the battlements to where Rob stood among his bannermen, his young queen at his side. When he saw her, her son took her silently in his arms. "Lord Hoster looked as noble as a king, my lady," murmured Jane. "Would that I had been given the chance to know him."
"And I to know him better," said Rob.
"He would have wished that too," said Catelyn. There were too many leagues between Riverrun and Winterfell, and too many mountains and rivers and armies between Riverrun and the Eyrie, it would seem. Lysa had made no reply to her letter, and from King's Landing came only silence as well. By now she had hoped that Brienne and Sir Cleos would have reached the city with their captive. It might even be that Brienne was on her way back, and the girls with her. Sir Cleos swore he would make the imp send a raven once the trade was made. He swore it. Ravens did not always win through. Some bowman could have brought the bird down and roasted him for supper. The letter that would have set her heart at ease might even now be lying by the ashes of some campfire beside a pile of raven bones.
Others were waiting to offer Rob their consolations, so Catelyn stood aside patiently while Lord Jason Mallister, the Great John, and Sir Rolf Spicer spoke to him each in turn. But when Lothar Frey approached, she gave his sleeve a tug. Rob turned and waited to hear what Lothar would say.
"Your Grace."
A plump man in his mid-30s, Lothar Frey had close-set eyes, a pointed beard, and dark hair that fell to his shoulders in ringlets. A leg, twisted at birth, had earned him the name Lame Lothar. He had served as his father's steward for the past dozen years.
"We are loath to intrude upon your grief, but perhaps you might grant us audience tonight."
"It would be my pleasure," said Rob. "It was never my wish to sow enmity between us."
"Nor mine to be the cause of it," said Queen Jane. Lothar Frey smiled.
"I understand, as does my lord father. He instructed me to say that he was young once, and he well remembers what it's like to lose one's heart to beauty."
Catelyn doubted very much that Lord Walder had said any such thing, or that he had ever lost his heart to beauty. The Lord of the Crossing had outlived 7 wives and was now wed to his 8th, but he spoke of them only as bed-warmers and brood-mares. Still, the words were fairly spoken, and she could scarce object to the compliment. Nor did Rob.
"Your father is most gracious," he said. "I shall look forward to our talk."
Lothar bowed, kissed the Queen's hand, and withdrew. By then a dozen others had gathered for a word. Rob spoke with each of them, giving a thanks here, a smile there, as needed. Only when the last of them was done did he turn back to Catelyn.
"There's something we must speak of. Will you walk with me?"
"As you command, Your Grace."
"That wasn't a command, Mother."
"It will be my pleasure, then."
Her son had treated her kindly enough since returning to River Run, yet he seldom sought her out. If he was more comfortable with his young queen, she could scarcely blame him. "Jane makes him smile, and I have nothing to share with him but grief." He seemed to enjoy the company of his bride's brothers as well. Young Rolam, his squire, and Sir Reynold, his standard-bearer. "They are standing in the boots of those he's lost," Catelyn realized when she watched them together. "Rolam has taken Bran's place, and Reynold is part Theon and part Jon Snow." Only with the Westerlings did she see Rob smile, or hear him laugh, like the boy he was. To the others he was always the king in the north, head bowed beneath the weight of the crown, even when his brows were bare. Rob kissed his wife gently, promised to see her in their chambers, and went off with his lady mother. His steps led them toward the Godswood. "Lothar seems amiable. That's a hopeful sign. We need the phrase."
"That does not mean we shall have them."
He nodded, and there was glumness to his face and a slope to his shoulders that made her heart go out to him. "The crown is crushing him," she thought. "He wants so much to be a good king, to be brave and honourable and clever, but the weight is too much for a boy to bear." Rob was doing all he could, yet the blows kept falling one after the other, relentless. When they brought him word of the Battle of Duskendale, where Lord Randall Tarley had shattered Robert Glover and Sir Helmund Tallheart, he might have been expected to rage. Instead, he'd stared in dumb disbelief and said,
"Duskendale, on the narrow sea? Why would they go to Duskendale?"
He'd shook his head, bewildered.
"A third of my foot lost for Duskendale." "The Iron Men have my castle, and now the Lannisters hold my brother,"
Gulbert Glover said, in a voice thick with despair. Robert Glover had survived the battle, but had been captured near the King's Road not long after. "Not for long," her son promised. "I will offer them Martin Lannister in exchange. Lord Tywin will have to accept for his brother's sake." Martin was Sir Kevin's son, a twin to the Willem that Lord Carstark had butchered. Those murders still haunted her son, Catelyn knew. He had tripled the guard around Martin, but still feared for his safety. "I should have traded the Kingslayer for Sansa when you first urged it," Rob said as they walked the gallery.
If I'd offered to wed her to the Knight of Flowers, the Tyrells might be ours instead of Joffrey's. I should have thought of that. Your mind was on your battles, and rightly so. Even a king cannot think of everything.
Battles, muttered Rob, as he led her out beneath the trees. I've won every battle, yet somehow I'm losing the war.
He looked up as if the answer might be written on the sky. The Iron Men hold Winterfell, and Moat Cailin too. Father's dead, and Bran and Rickon. Maybe Arya. And now your father too. She could not let him despair. She knew the taste of that draught too well herself. My father has been dying for a long time. You could not have changed that. You have made mistakes, Rob, but what king has not? Ned would have been proud of you.
Mother, there's something you must know.
Catelyn's heart skipped a beat. This is something he hates, something he dreads to tell me. All she could think of was Brienne and her mission.
Is it the Kingslayer?
No. It's Sansa.
She's dead, Catelyn thought at once. Brienne failed. Jaime is dead, and Cersei has killed my sweet girl in retribution. For a moment she could barely speak.
Is she gone, Rob?
Gone? He looked startled. Dead? Oh, Mother, no, not that. They haven't harmed her. Not that way, only a bird came last night, and I couldn't bring myself to tell you, not until your father was sent to his rest.
Rob took a hand.
They married her to Tyrion Lannister.
Catelyn's fingers clutched at his.
The imp?
Yes.
He swore to trade her for his brother, she said numbly. Sansa and Arya both. We would have them back if we returned his precious Jaime. He swore it before the whole court. How could he marry her, after saying that, in sight of gods and men?
He's the Kingslayer's brother. Oath-breaking runs in their blood.
Rob's fingers brushed the pommel of his sword. If I could, I'd take his ugly head off. Sansa would be a widow then and free. There's no other way that I can see. They made her speak her vows before a septon and don a crimson cloak. Catelyn remembered the twisted little man she had seized at the Crossroads Inn and carried all the way to the Eyrie. I should have let Lysa push him out her moon door.
My poor sweet Sansa. Why would anyone do this to her?
For Winterfell, Rob said at once. With Bran and Rickon dead, Sansa is my heir. If anything should happen to me...
She clutched tight at his hand.
Nothing will happen to you. Nothing. I could not stand it. They took Ned and your sweet brothers. Sansa is married. Arya is lost. My father dead. If anything befell you, I would go mad, Rob. You are all I have left. You are all the North has left.
I'm not dead yet, Mother.
Suddenly Catelyn was full of dread. Wars need not be fought until the last drop of blood. Even then she could hear the desperation in her voice. You would not be the first king to bend the knee, nor even the first Stark.
His mouth tightened.
No, never. There's no shame in it. Balon Greyjoy bent the knee to Robert when his rebellion failed. Torrhen Stark bent the knee to Aegon the Conqueror rather than see his army face the fires. Did Aegon kill King Torrhen's father?
He pulled his hand from hers.
Never, I said.
He is playing the boy now, not the king.
The Lannisters do not need the North. They will require homage and hostages, no more, and the imp will keep Sansa no matter what we do. So they have their hostage. The Iron Men will prove a more implacable enemy, I promise you. To have any hope of holding the North, the Greyjoys must leave no single sprig of House Stark alive to dispute their right. Theon's murdered Bran and Rickon, so now all they need do is kill you. And Jane, yes. Do you think Lord Balon can afford to let her live to bear you heirs?
Rob's face was cold.
Is that why you freed the Kingslayer? To make a peace with the Lannisters?
I freed Jaime for Sansa's sake, and Arya's, if she still lives. You know that. But if I nurtured some hope of buying peace as well, was that so ill?
Yes, he said. The Lannisters killed my father.
Do you think I have forgotten that? I don't know. Have you? Catelyn had never struck her children in anger, but she almost struck Rob then. It was an effort to remind herself how frightened and alone he must feel. You are king in the north. The choice is yours. I only ask that you think on what I've said. The singers make much of kings who die valiantly in battle, but your life is worth more than a song. To me, at least, who gave it to you. She lowered her head. Do I have your leave to go? Yes. He turned away and drew his sword. What he meant to do with it, she could not say. There was no enemy there, no one to fight, only her and him, amongst tall trees and fallen leaves. There are fights no sword can win. Catelyn wanted to tell him, but she feared the king was deaf to such words. Hours later, she was sewing in her bedchamber when young Roland Westling came running with a summons to supper. Good, Catelyn thought, relieved. She had not been certain that her son would want her there after their quarrel. A dutiful squire, she said to Roland gravely. Bran would have been the same. If Rob seemed cool at table and Edmure surly, lame Lothar made up for them both. He was the model of courtesy, reminiscing warmly about Lord Huster, offering Catelyn gentle condolences on the loss of Bran and Rickon, praising Edmure for the victory at Stone Mill, and thanking Rob for the swift, sure justice he had meted out to Rickard Karstark. Lothar's bastard brother, Walder Rivers, was another matter. A harsh, sour man, with old Lord Walder's suspicious face, he spoke but seldom and devoted most of his attention to the meat and mead that was set before him. When all the empty words were said, the Queen and the other Westlings excused themselves. The remains of the meal were cleared away, and Lothar Frey cleared his throat.
"Before we turn to the business that brings us here, there is another matter," he said solemnly. "A grave matter, I fear. I'd hoped it would not fall to me to bring you these tidings, but it seems I must. My lord father has had a letter from his grandsons."
Catelyn had been so lost in grief for her own that she had almost forgotten the two Freys she had agreed to foster. No more, she thought. Mother have mercy. How many more blows can we bear? Somehow she knew the next word she heard would plunge yet another blade into her heart. The grandsons at Winterfell? She made herself ask. My wards?
Walder and Walder, yes. But they are presently at the Dreadfort, my lady. I grieve to tell you this, but there has been a battle. Winterfell is burned.
Burned? Rob's voice was incredulous.
Your northern lords tried to retake it from the Ironmen. When Theon Greyjoy saw that his prize was lost, he put the castle to the torch.
We have heard naught of any battle, said Sir Brynden.
My nephews are young, I grant you, but they were there. Big Waldo wrote the letter, though his cousin signed as well. It was a bloody bit of business by their account. Your castellan was slain. Sir Roderick, was that his name?
Sir Roderick Cassell, said Catelyn numbly. That dear, brave, loyal old soul. She could almost see him, tugging on his fierce white whiskers. What of our other people?
The Iron Men put many of them to the sword, I fear.
Wordless with rage, Rob slammed a fist down on the table and turned his face away, so the Freys would not see his tears. But his mother saw them. The world grows a little darker every day. Catelyn's thoughts went to Sir Roderick's little daughter, Beth, to tireless Maester Lewin and cheerful Septon Shale, Micken at the forge, Farlan and Parler in the kennels, old Nan, and simple Hodor. Her heart was sick. Please, not all.
No, said lame Lothar. The women and children hid, My nephews Walder and Walder among them. With Winterfell in ruins, the survivors were carried back to the Dreadfort by this son of Lord Bolton's.
Bolton's son? Rob's voice was strained. Walder Rivers spoke up.
A bastard son, I believe.
Not Ramsay Snow. Does Lord Roos have another bastard? Rob scowled. This Ramsay was a monster and a murderer, and he died a coward, or so I'm told.
I cannot speak to that. There's so much confusion in any war. Many false reports. All I can tell you is that my nephews claim it was this bastard son of Bolton's who saved the women of Winterfell and the little ones. They are safe at the Dreadfort now, all those who remain.
Theon? Rob said suddenly. What happened to Theon Greyjoy? Was he slain? Lame Lothar spread his hands.
That I cannot say, Your Grace. Walder and Walder made no mention of his fate. Perhaps Lord Bolton might know, if he has had word from this son of his.
Sir Brynden said,
We will be certain to ask him.
You're all distraught, I see. I'm sorry to have brought you such fresh grief. Perhaps we should adjourn until the morrow. Our business can wait until you have composed yourselves.
No, said Rob. I want the matter settled. Her brother Edmure nodded.
Me as well. Do you have an answer to our offer, my lord?
I do.
Lothar smiled.
My lord father bids me tell your grace that he will agree to this new marriage alliance between our houses and renew his fealty to the king in the north upon the condition that the king's grace apologize for the insult done to House Frey in his royal person, face to face.
An apology was a small enough price to pay, but Catelyn misliked this petty condition of Lord Walder's at once.
I'm pleased, Rob said cautiously. It was never my wish to cause this rift between us, Lothar. The Freys have fought valiantly for my cause. I would have them at my side once more.
You're too kind, Your Grace. As you accept these terms, I am then instructed to offer Lord Tully the hand of my sister, the Lady Roslin, a maid of 16 years. Roslin is my Lord Father's youngest daughter by Lady Bethany of House Rosby, his 6th wife. She has a gentle nature and a gift for music.
Edmure shifted in his seat.
Might not it be better if I first met?
You'll meet when you're wet,
said Walder Rivers curtly.
Unless Lord Tully feels the need to count her teeth first.
Edmure kept his temper.
I will take your word so far as her teeth are concerned, but it would be pleasant if I might gaze upon her face before I espoused her.
You must accept her now, my lord, said Walder Rivers, else my father's offer is withdrawn.
Lame Lothar spread his hands.
My brother has a soldier's bluntness, but what he says is true. It is my lord father's wish that this marriage take place at once.
At once?
Edmure sounded so unhappy that Catelyn had the unworthy thought that perhaps he had been entertaining notions of breaking the betrothal after the fighting was done.
Has Lord Walder forgotten that we are fighting a war?
Brynden Blackfish asked sharply.
Scarcely, said Lothar. That is why he insists that the marriage take place now, sir. Men die in war, even men who are young and strong. What would become of our alliance should Lord Edmure fall before he took Roslin to bride? And there is my father's age to consider as well. He is past 90, and not like to see the end of this struggle. It would put his noble heart at peace if he could see his dear Roslin safely wed before the gods take him, so he might die with the knowledge that the girl had a strong husband to cherish and protect her.
We all want Lord Walder to die happy. Catelyn was growing less and less comfortable with this arrangement. My brother has just lost his own father. He needs time to mourn.
Roslin is a cheerful girl, said Lothar.
She may be the very thing Lord Edmure needs to help him through his grief.
And my grandfather has come to mislike lengthy betrothals,
the bastard Walder Rivers added.
I cannot imagine why.
Rob gave him a chilly look.
I take your meaning, Rivers. Pray excuse us.
As your grace commands.
Lame Lothar rose, and his bastard brother helped him hobble from the room. Edmure was seething.
There is much as saying that my promise is worthless. Why should I let that old weasel choose my bride? Lord Walder has other daughters besides this Roslyn, granddaughters as well. I should be offered the same choice you were. I'm his liege lord. He should be overjoyed that I'm willing to wed any of them.
He's a proud man, and we've wounded him, said Catelyn.
The others take his pride. I will not be shamed in my own hall. My answer is no.
Rob gave him a weary look. I will not command you, not in this. But if you refuse, Lord Frey will take it for another slight, and any hope of putting this aright will be gone.
You cannot know that, Edmure insisted. Frey has wanted me for one of his daughters since the day I was born. He will not let a chance like this slip between those grasping fingers of his. When Lothar brings him our answer, he'll come wheedling back and accept a betrothal, and to a daughter of my choosing.
Perhaps, in time, said Brynden Blackfish. But can we wait while Lothar rides back and forth with offers and counters?
Rob's hands curled into fists. I must get back to the north. My brother's dead. Winterfell burned. My small folk put to the sword. The gods only know what this bastard of Bolton is about, or whether Theon is still alive and on the loose. I can't sit here waiting for a wedding that might or might not happen.
It must happen, said Catelyn, though not gladly. I have no more wish to suffer Walder Frey's insults and complaints than you do, brother, but I see little choice here. Without this wedding, Rob's cause is lost.
Edmure, we must accept.
We must accept, he echoed peevishly. I don't see you offering to become the ninth Lady Frey, Cat.
The eighth Lady Frey is still alive and well, so far as I know, she replied. Thankfully. Otherwise it might well have come to that, knowing Lord Walder.
The Blackfish said,
I am the last man in the Seven Kingdoms to tell anyone who they must wed, nephew.
Nonetheless, you did say something about making amends for your Battle of the Fords. I had in mind a different sort of amends. Single combat with a Kingslayer, 7 years of penance as a begging brother, swimming the sunset sea with my legs tied.
When he saw no one was smiling, Edmure threw up his hands.
Ach, the others take you all. Very well, I'll wed the wench as amends.
Eddard. He found Littlefinger in the brothel's common room, chatting amiably with a tall, elegant woman who wore a feathered gown over skin as black as ink. By the hearth, Hewitt and a buxom wench were playing at forfeits. From the look of it, he'd lost his belt, his cloak, his mail shirt, and his right boot so far, while the girl had been forced to unbutton her shift to the waist. Jorry Cassell stood beside a rain-streaked window with a wry smile on his face, watching Hewitt turn over tiles and enjoying the view. Ned paused at the foot of the stair and pulled on his gloves. It's time we took our leave. My business here is done. Hewitt lurched to his feet, hurriedly gathering up his things.
As you will, my lord, Jorry said. I'll out, Will, bring round the horses.
He strode to the door. Littlefinger took his time saying his farewells. He kissed the black woman's hand, whispered some joke that made her laugh aloud, and sauntered over to Ned. Your business, he said lightly, or Robert's? They say the hand dreams the king's dreams, speaks the king's voice, and rules with the king's sword. Does that also mean you fuck with the king's...
Lord Baelish, Ned interrupted. You presume too much.
I am not ungrateful for your help. It might have taken us years to find this brothel without you. That does not mean I intend to endure your mockery, and I am no longer the King's Hand."
"The direwolf must be a prickly beast," said Littlefinger with a sharp twist of his mouth.
A warm rain was pelting down from a starless black sky as they walked to the stables. Ned drew up the hood of his cloak. Jorry brought out his horse. Young Will came right behind him, leading Littlefinger's mare with one hand, while the other fumbled with his belt and the lacings of his trousers. A barefoot whore leaned out of the stable door, giggling at him.
"Will we be going back to the castle now, my lord?"
Jorry asked. Ned nodded and swung into the saddle. Littlefinger mounted up beside him. Jorry and the others followed. "Chateau runs a choice establishment," Littlefinger said as they rode. "I've half a mind to buy it. Brothels are a much sounder investment than ships, I've found. Whores seldom sink, and when they are boarded by pirates, why, the pirates pay good coin like everyone else." Lord Petar chuckled at his own wit. Ned let him prattle on. After a time, he quieted and they rode in silence. The streets of King's Landing were dark and deserted. The rain had driven everyone under their roofs. It beat down on Ned's head, warm as blood and relentless as old guilts. Fat drops of water ran down his face.
"Robert would never keep to one bed," Lyanna had told him at Winterfell on the night long ago when their father had promised her hand to the young Lord of Storm's End. "I hear he has gotten a child on some girl in the Vale." Ned had held the babe in his arms. He could scarcely deny her, nor would he lie to his sister. But he had assured her that what Robert did before their betrothal was of no matter, that he was a good man and true, who would love her with all his heart. Lyanna had only smiled. "Love is sweet, dearest Ned, but it cannot change a man's nature." The girl had been so young. Ned had not dared to ask her age. No doubt she had been a virgin. The better brothels could always find a virgin if the purse was fat enough. She had light red hair with a powdering of freckles across the bridge of her nose, and when she slipped free a breast to give her nipple to the babe, he saw that her bosom was freckled as well.
"I named her Barra," she said, as the child nurse. "She looks so like him, does she not, my lord? She has his nose and his hair."
"She does," Eddard Stark had touched the baby's fine dark hair. It flowed through his fingers like black silk. Robert's firstborn had had the same fine hair, he seemed to recall.
"Tell him that when you see him, my lord, as it please you. Tell him how beautiful she is."
"I will," Ned had promised her. That was his curse. Robert would swear on dying love and forget them before evenfall. But Ned Stark kept his vows. He thought of the promises he'd made Lyanna as she lay dying, and the price he'd paid to keep them.
"And tell him I've not been with no one else. I swear it, my lord, by the old gods and you. Shataya said I could have half a year for the baby and for hoping he'd come back. So you'll tell him I'm waiting, won't you? I don't want no jewels or nothing, just him. He was always good to me, truly."
"Good to you," Ned thought hollowly. "I will tell him, child, and I promise you, Barra shall not go wanting." She had smiled then, a smile so tremulous and sweet that it cut the heart out of him. Riding through the rainy night, Ned saw Jon Snow's face in front of him, so like the younger version of his own. If the gods frowned so on bastards, he thought dully, why did they fill men with such lusts? "Lord Baelish, what do you know of Robert's bastards?"
"Well, he has more than you, for a start."
"How many?" Littlefinger shrugged. Rivulets of moisture twisted down the back of his cloak. "Does it matter? If you bed enough women, some will give you presents, and his grace has never been shy on that count. I know he's acknowledged that boy at Storm's End, the one he fathered the night Lord Stannis wed. He could hardly do otherwise. The mother was a Florent, niece to Lady Celice, one of her bedmaids. Renly says that Robert carried the girl upstairs during the feast and broke in the wedding bed while Stannis and his bride were still dancing. Lord Stannis seemed to think that was a blot on the honour of his wife's house. So when the boy was born, he shipped him off to Renly. He gave Ned a sideways glance. I've also heard whispers that Robert got a pair of twins on a serving wench at Casterly Rock 3 years ago when he went west for Lord Tywin's tourney. Cersei had the babes killed, and sold the mother to a passing slaver. Too much an affront to Lannister pride, that close to home. Ned Stark grimaced. Ugly tales like that were told of every great lord in the realm. He could believe it as Cersei Lannister readily enough, but would the king stand by and let it happen? The Robert he had known would not have, but the Robert he had known had never been so practiced at shutting his eyes to things he did not wish to see. Why would John Arryn take a sudden interest in the king's base-born children? The short man gave a sudden shrug. He was the king's hand. Doubtless, Robert asked him to see they were provided for. Ned was soaked through to the bone, and his soul had grown cold. It had to be more than that, or why kill him? Littlefinger shook the rein from his hair and laughed. Now I see. Lord Arryn learned that his grace had filled the bellies of some whores and fishwives, and for that he had to be silenced. Small wonder. Allow a man like that to live, and next he's likely to blurt out that the sun rises in the east. There was no answer Ned Stark could give to that but a frown. For the first time in years he found himself remembering Rhaegar Targaryen. He wondered if Rhaegar had frequented brothels. Somehow he thought not. The rain was falling harder now, stinging the eyes and drumming against the ground. Rivers of black water were running down the hill when Jory called out, "My lord!" His voice hoarse with alarm. And in an instant, the street was full of soldiers. Ned glimpsed ringmail over leather, gauntlets and greaves, steel helms with golden lions on the crests. Their cloaks clung to their backs sudden with rain. He had no time to count, but there were 10 at least, a line of them, on foot, blocking the street, with long swords and iron-tipped spears. "Behind!" he heard Will cry, and when he turned his horse, there were more in back of them, cutting off their retreat. Jory's sword came singing from its scabbard. "Make way or die!" "The wolves are howling," their leader said. Ned could see rain running down his face. Such a small pack, though. Littlefinger walked his horse forward, step by careful step. "What is the meaning of this?" "This is the hand of the king." He was the hand of the king. The mud muffled the hooves of the blood-bay stallion. The lion parted before him. On a golden breastplate, the Lion of Lannister roared its defiance. Now, if truth be told, I'm not sure what he is. "Lannister, this is madness," Littlefinger said. "Let us pass. We're expected back at the castle. What do you think you're doing?" "He knows what he's doing," Ned said calmly. Jaime Lannister smiled. "Quite true. I'm looking for my brother. You remember my brother, don't you, Lord Stark? He was with us at Winterfell. Fair-haired, mismatched eyes, sharp of tongue, a short man." "I remember him well," Ned replied. "It would seem he has met some trouble on the road. My lord father is quite vexed. You would not perchance have any notion of who might have wished my brother ill, would you? Your brother has been taken at my command to answer for his crimes," Ned Stark said. Littlefinger groaned in dismay. "Oh, my lord." Sir Jaime ripped the longsword from his sheath and urged his stallion forward. "Show me your steel, Lord Eddard. I'll butcher you like Ares if I must. But I'd sooner you died with a blade in your hand." He gave Littlefinger a cool, contemptuous glance.
Lord Baelish, I'd leave here in some haste, if I did not care to get bloodstains on my costly clothing. Littlefinger did not need to be urged. I will bring the city watch, he promised Ned. The Lannister line parted to let him through and closed behind him. Littlefinger put his heels to his mare and vanished around a corner. Ned's men had drawn their swords, but there were 3 against 20. Eyes watched from nearby windows and doors, but no one was about to intervene. His party was mounted, the Lannisters on foot, save for Jaime himself. A charge might win them free, but it seemed to Eddard Stark that they had a surer, safer tactic. "Kill me," he warned the Kingslayer, "and Catelyn will most certainly slay Tyrion." Jaime Lannister poked at Ned's chest with a gilded sword that had sipped the blood of the last of the Dragon Kings. Would she? The noble Catelyn Tully of Riverrun murder a hostage? I think not, he sighed. But I am not willing to chance my brother's life on a woman's honour. Jaime slid the golden sword into its sheath. So I suppose I'll let you run back to Robert to tell him how I've frightened you. I wonder if he'll care. Jaime pushed his wet hair back with his fingers and wheeled his horse around. When he was beyond the line of swordsmen, he glanced back at his captain. Tregar, see that no harm comes to Lord Stark. As you say, my lord. Still, we wouldn't want him to leave here entirely unchastened, so... Through the night and the rain he glimpsed the white of Jaime's smile. Kill his men. No! Ned Stark screamed, clawing for his sword. Jaime was already cantering off down the street as he heard Will shout. Men closed from both sides. Ned rode one down, cutting at phantoms in red cloaks who gave way before him. Jorah Cassel put his heels into his mount and charged. A steel shod hoof caught a Lannister guardsman in the face with a sickening crunch. A second man reeled away, and for an instant Jorah was free. Will cursed as they pulled him off his dying horse, sword slashing in the rain. Ned galloped to him, bringing his longsword down on Tregar's helm. The jolt of impact made him grit his teeth. Tregar stumbled to his knees, his lion crest sheared in half, blood running down his face. Hewitt was hacking at the hands that had seized his bridle when a spear caught him in the belly. Suddenly Jorah was back among them, a red rain flying from his sword. No! Ned shouted. Jorah, away! Ned's horse slipped under him and came crashing down in the mud. There was a moment of blinding pain and the taste of blood in his mouth. He saw them cut the legs from Jorah's mount and drag him to the earth, swords rising and falling as they closed in around him. When Ned's horse lurched back to its feet, he tried to rise, but only to fall again, choking on his scream. He could see the splintered bone poking through his calf. It was the last thing he saw for a time. The rain came down and down and down. When he opened his eyes again, Lord Eddard Stark was alone with his dead. His horse moved closer, caught the rank smell of blood, and galloped away. Ned began to drag himself through the mud, gritting his teeth at the agony in his leg. It seemed to take years. Faces watched from candlelit windows, and people began to emerge from alleys and doors, but no one moved to help. Littlefinger and the city watch found him there in the street, cradling Jorah Cassel's body in his arms. Somewhere the gold cloaks found a litter, but the trip back to the castle was a blur of agony, and Ned lost consciousness more than once. He remembered seeing the Red Keep looming ahead of him in the first grey light of dawn. The rain had darkened the pale pink stone of the massive walls to the colour of blood. Then Grand Maester Pycelle was looming over him, holding a cup, whispering, "Drink, my lord, here, the milk of the poppy, for your pain." He remembered swallowing, and Pycelle was telling someone to heat the wine to boiling and fetch him clean silk, and that was the last he knew.
John. The sun had broken through near midday, after 7 days of dark skies and snow flurries. Some of the drifts were higher than a man, but the stewards had been shoveling all day and the paths were as clean as they were like to get. Reflections glimmered off the wall, every crack and crevice glittering pale blue. 700 feet up, John Snow stood looking down upon the haunted forest. A north wind swirled through the trees below, sending thin white plumes of snow crystals flying from the highest branches, like icy banners. Elsewise, nothing moved. Not a sign of life. That was not entirely reassuring. It was not the living that he feared. Even so, the sun is out. The snow has stopped. It may be a moon's turn before we have another chance as good. It may be a season. Have Emmett assemble his recruits, he told Dolorous Ed. We'll want an escort. 10 rangers, armed with dragon glass. I want them ready to leave within the hour. Oi, my lord. And to command? That would be me. Ed's mouth turned down even more than usual.
Some might think it better if the Lord Commander stayed safe and warm south of the wall. Not that I'd say such myself, but some might.
John smiled.
Some had best not say so in my presence.
A sudden gust of wind set Ed's cloak to flapping noisily.
Best to go down, my lord. This wind's like to push us off the wall, and I never did learn the knack of flying.
They rode the winch lift back to the ground. The wind was gusting, cold as the breath of the ice dragon in the tales old Nan had told them when John was a boy. The heavy cage was swaying. From time to time, it scraped against the wall, starting small crystalline showers of ice that sparkled in the sunlight as they fell, like shards of broken glass. Glass, John mused, might be of use here. Castle Black needs its own glass gardens, like the ones at Winterfell. We could grow vegetables even in the deep of winter. The best glass came from Mere, but a good clear pane was worth its weight in spice, and green and yellow glass would not work as well. What we need is gold. With enough coin we could buy prentice glass blowers and glaziers in Mere, bring them north, offer them their freedom for teaching their art to some of our recruits. That would be the way to go about it. If we had the gold, which we do not. At the base of the wall he found Ghost, rolling in a snowbank. The big white direwolf seemed to love fresh snow. When he saw John, he bounded back onto his feet and shook himself off. Dolorous Ed said, "He's going with you, eh?" "He is." "Oh, a clever wolf, him. And me?"
"You're not." "A clever lord, you. Ghost's the better choice. I don't have the teeth for biting wildlings any more."
"If the guards are good, we won't encounter any wildlings. I'll want the grey gelding." Word spread fast at Castle Black. Ed was still saddling the grey when Bowen Marsh stumped across the yard to confront John at the stables.
"My lord, I wish you would reconsider. The new men can take their vows in the Sept as easily."
"The Sept is home to the new gods. The old gods live in the wood, and those who honour them say their words amongst the weirwoods. You know that as well as I."
"Saturn comes from Oldtown, and Aaron and Emric from the Westerlands. The old gods are not their gods."
"I do not tell men which god to worship. They were free to choose the Seven, or the Red Woman's Lord of Light. They chose the trees instead, with all the peril that entails."
"The Weeping Man may still be out there watching."
"The grove is no more than 2 hours' ride, even with the snow. We should be back by midnight."
"Too long. This is not wise."
"Unwise," said John, "but necessary. These men are about to pledge their lives to the Night's Watch, joining a brotherhood that stretches back in an unbroken line for thousands of years. The words matter, and so do these traditions. They bind us all together, high-born and low, young and old, base and noble. They make us brothers. He clapped Marsh on his shoulder. I promise you, we shall return.
Aye, my lord, said the Lord Steward. But will it be as living men, or heads on spears, with your eyes scooped out? You will be returning through the black of night. The snowdrifts are waist-deep in places. I see that you're taking seasoned men with you. Well, that is good. But Black Jack Bulwer knew these woods as well. Even Benjen Stark, your own uncle, he...
I have something they did not. John turned his head and whistled. Ghost, to me. The direwolf shook the snow from his back and trotted to John's side. The rangers parted to let him through, though one mare whinnied and shied away until Rory gave her reins a sharp tug. The wall is yours, Lord Bowen. He took his horse by the bridle and walked him to the gate and the icy tunnel that snaked beneath the wall. Beyond the ice, the trees stood tall and silent, huddled in thick white cloaks. Ghost stalked beside John's horse as the rangers and recruits formed up, then stopped and sniffed, his breath frosting in the air. What is it? John asked. Is someone there? The woods were empty as far as he could see, but that was not very far. Ghost bounded toward the trees, slipped between two white-cloaked pines, and vanished in a cloud of snow. He wants to hunt, but what? John did not fear for the direwolf so much as for any wildlings he might encounter. A white wolf in a white wood, silent as a shadow. They will never know his coming. He knew better than to go chasing him. Ghost would return when he wanted to, and not before. John put his heels into his horse. His men fell in around them, the hooves of their garrons breaking through the icy crust to the softer snow beneath. Into the woods they went, at a steady walking pace, as the wall dwindled behind them. The soldier pines and sentinels wore thick white coats, and icicles draped the bare brown limbs of the broadleafs. John sent Tom Barleycorn ahead to scout for them, though the way to the white grove was off-trod and familiar. Big Liddle and Luke of Longtown slipped into the brush to east and west. They would flank the column to give warning of any approach. All were seasoned rangers, armed with obsidian as well as steel, warhorns slung across their saddles should they need to summon help. The others were good men, too. Good men in a fight, at least, and loyal to their brothers. John could not speak for what they might have been before they reached the wall, but he did not doubt that most had pasts as black as their cloaks. Up here they were the sort of men he wanted at his back. Their hoods were raised against the biting wind, and some had scarves wrapped about their faces, hiding their features. John knew them, though. Every name was graven on his heart. They were his men, his brothers. Six more rode with them, a mix of young and old, large and small, seasoned and raw. Six to say the words. Horse had been born and raised in Molestown. Aaron and Emric came from Fair Isle, Saturn from the brothels of Oldtown at the other end of Westeros. All of them were boys. Leathers and Jacks were older men, well past 40, sons of the Haunted Forest, with sons and grandsons of their own. They had been two of the 63 wildlings who had followed Jon Snow back to the wall the day he made his appeal. So far, the only two to decide they wanted a black cloak. Iron Emmett said they all were ready, or as ready as they were ever going to be. He and John and Bowen Marsh had weighed each man in turn and assigned them to an order. Leathers, Jacks, and Emric to the rangers, Horse to the builders, Aaron and Saturn to the stewards. The time had come for them to take their vows. Iron Emmet rode at the head of the column, mounted on the ugliest horse John had ever seen, a shaggy beast that looked to be all hair and hooves. Talk is there was some trouble at Harlot's Tower last night, the master-at-arms said. Harden's Tower? Of the 63 who had come back with him from Molestown, 19 had been women and girls. John had housed them in the same abandoned tower where he had once slept when he had been new to the war. 12 were spearwives, more than capable of defending both themselves and the younger girls from the unwanted attentions of black brothers. It was some of the men they'd turned away who'd given Harden's Tower its new inflammatory name. John was not about to condone the mockery. 3 drunken fools mistook Harden's for a brothel, that's all. They are in the ice cells now, contemplating their mistake. Iron Emmet grimaced. Men are men, vows are words, and words are wind. You should put guards around the women. And who will guard the guards?
You know nothing, John Snow.
He had learned, though, and Ygritte had been his teacher. If he could not hold to his own vows, how could he expect more of his brothers? But there were dangers in trifling with wilding women.
A man can own a woman, and a man can own a knife,
Ygritte had told him once,
but no man can own both.
Bowen Marsh had not been all wrong. Harden's Tower was tinder waiting for a spark. I mean to open 3 more castles, John said. Deep Lake, Sable Hall, and the Long Barrow. All garrisoned with free folk, under the command of our own officers. The Long Barrow will be all women, aside from the commander and chief steward. Oh, there would be some mingling, he did not doubt, but the distances were great enough to make that difficult at least. And what poor fool will get that choice command? I am riding beside him. The look of mingled horror and delight that passed across Iron Emmet's face was worth more than a sack of gold. What have I done to make you hate me so, my lord? John laughed. Have no fear. You won't be alone. I mean to give you Dolorous Ed as your second and your steward. The spearwives will be so happy. You might do well to bestow a castle on the Magna. John's smile died. I might, if I could trust him. Sigorn blames me for his father's death, I fear. Worse, he was bred and trained to give orders, not to take them. Do not confuse their thens with free folk. Magna means lord in the old tongue, I am told, but Stir was closer to a god to his people, and his son is cut from the same skin. I do not require men to kneel, but they do need to obey. I am a lord, but you had best do something with the Magna. You'll have trouble with the Thens if you ignore them. Trouble is the Lord Commander's lot, John might have said. His visit to Molestown was giving him plenty, as it happened, and the women were the least of it. Halleck was proving to be just as truculent as he had feared, and there were some amongst the Black Brothers whose hatred of the free folk was bone deep. One of Halleck's followers had already cut off a builder's ear in the yard, and like as not that was just a taste of the bloodshed to come. He had to get the old forts open soon, so Harmer's brother could be sent off to garrison Deep Lake or Sable Hall. Just now, though, neither of those was fit for human habitation. And Othel Yarvik and his builders were still off trying to restore the night fort. There were nights when John Snow wondered if he had not made a grievous mistake by preventing Stannis from marching all the wildlings off to be slaughtered. I know nothing, Ygritte, he thought, and perhaps I never will. Half a mile from the grove, long red shafts of autumn sunlight were slanting down between the branches of the leafless trees, staining the snowdrifts pink. The riders crossed a frozen stream between 2 jagged rocks armoured in ice, then followed a twisting game trail to the northeast. Whenever the wind kicked up, sprays of loose snow filled the air and stung their eyes. John pulled his scarf up over his mouth and nose and raised the hood and his cloak. "Not far now," he told the men. No one replied. John smelled Tom Barleycorn.